If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. Hesh, Hesher Dude, Hesher McHesherton, El Hesherino, and Hesher the Magnificent.
Who calls him that?
Brian McClain is Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, well, hey, this has been quite the day here at TNT. If you've been like me, have been listening since the Joe Hoff show this morning, maybe you even started earlier than me, but I was up late trying to track all these headlines and stuff. My goodness, so I started with Joe Hoff show. Listened all the way up until I came on air with Lou Pate. And it's just amazing to see the, you know, you're not going to find this. I will say this, you know, you may not like some of the takes you're hearing, but at least here at today's News Talk Radio, we don't get told what to say. You know what I mean? We walk up to the mic and we do our thing and we speak to our guests. And, you know, you're really going to have a hard time finding something like that, this sort of diversity of opinion, as a holy war of some sort is starting to break out on top of what's gone on in Ukraine and what's gone on in the Middle East since 9/11. And let's not forget what just happened to us in the last 3 years here with the COVIDian power strike that we've just been subjected to. The rollout of a vast pandemic industrial complex, which is not going anywhere, and the loss of, you know, over 500,000 fighters, Ukrainian fighters, and then, you know, however many Russians have been lost. You know, there, we've got a lot of death going on in the world, and I cannot help but be very skeptical of a lot of the narratives that are coming out of governments who just recently locked us down and tried to tell us we had to take experimental shots. So hang on, everybody. Buckle up, buttercups, because it's not going to get much friendlier as things go on here. You know, you're being asked to take sides right now, sides that you, if for places you've probably never been, if you're like me. And you're being asked to not look at nuance. You're being asked to put aside, in many cases, the fact that we're under color revolution tactics right here in America right now. We have an open border. There are active weapons of mass migration tactics being used. And they have been being used in Europe for a long time. They've been being used here for a long time. They're just on full Spinal Tap 11 right now with a completely open border. So, you know, I am just trying to maintain good relationships, make sure I know that, I got my neighbor's back and hopefully my neighbor's got my back. You know, that's the important thing, that we not be polarized against each other. But this one, this is a tough one. This is a tough one. It just is. It just absolutely is, and it will continue to be. So I will do my best here. I'm going to do my best to keep all my relationships good. It was difficult during COVID. It was difficult during the age of vaccinations, if you can call them that. Remember, they had to redefine that word to fit that in there. But that's a story for another time. They did that with Trump, they did it with COVID, they did it with vax, they did it with Ukraine, they do it with sex, they do it with gender. They want us at each other's absolute throats. And many of these things, like our health, for example, the education of our kids, for example, should not be politicized. That shouldn't be an us or them situation. And, you know, a lot of lives are at stake. And we've been deleting a lot of lives from the planet in the name of, under these umbrellas, some of these that I just mentioned right here, for years. And is there a pro-war? Do we have a pro-war party? Is there one I can look to? Is there anyone at this point? And I was kind of hoping that, like, I wouldn't see every single presidential candidate be like, hey, let's go to war. Let's glass this place right away. You know, after do we not remember weapons of mass destruction? Do we not remember incubator babies? Do we not remember roving Viagra rape gangs? Oh, what about Assad gassing his own people? What about that poor little boy that was made a propaganda piece by the White Helmets? Forget his name, Omar something, little Dusty Boy. They called him Dusty Boy in the media. How degrading when you find out how that was really filmed and everything. So, you know, forgive me for being skeptical about the headlines and for not reading you any headlines as we roll into our first amazing guest here. But let me remind you, here at TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take and our guest takes on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We got you covered on TNT Radio.
News reported fairly.
They are a reliable source.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So I've been in the deepest, darkest parts of the interwebs today. You may be able to tell that from my opening monologue there. I've been in the X spaces, in the history books, in the video feeds, and listening to TNT Radio all day. So I'm in need of an update on the federal government's response as of today to the violence that's broken out in Israel and Palestine. And here to bring us up to speed is the comms director at America First Policy Institute, Hilton Beckham. Hilton, welcome. What's coming out of the Biden administration today with regards to current events? It's great to see you, by the way.
Hey, good to see you too. And just to bring back to your opening monologue, I now wish I didn't live in a city. I live in DC where you're not even allowed to have pepper spray, given how times are going. So yeah, pepper spray is illegal here. But
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. I hope your jujitsu is on point.
I know. I just got to have these always up in arms. DC is quite interesting right now with what's happening in Israel. I would say most of it is, you know, that everyone's backing Israel as they should. But it's a little sad if you've gone onto the White House like Twitter today. Well, first of all, the White House called a lid. And if you don't know what a lid is, that basically is to the press when they say, like, you know, today's done, go home. There's no more stories. Biden isn't coming out. He's not doing anything else. And they've done this the past two days. They've called lids around noon with a war that is broken out over in Israel. And people and journalists, even on the left, don't really understand why they're calling lids so early. And then on top of that, if you go through their like Twitter page, it's like they did one post about Israel last night, but then the rest is like talking about, you know, the economy and how it's thriving, which I don't know where they got that from. And then they're also talking about abortion issues. Kamala has a post out about, you know, protecting women's reproductive rights. So it just seems like an interesting time to be posting that when women and children are literally getting raped and murdered in the streets of Israel right now. And so it really puts a question mark on, you know, where exactly does Biden stand, especially since we just recently handed Iran, you know, what is it, $6 billion? And now Iran has come out and said they helped plan the Israel attack. So it's a little depressing on seeing where our government is heading right now.
Well, you know, you bring up the abortion part, and I also noticed Kamala out there in the last couple of weeks announcing some sort of new anti-gun violence thing. She's proud to be at the head of. I'm thinking this is all campaign PR junkets, and you know, they're writers and everything. They're having to rewrite and having to recontract and trying to get their final messaging out on this before the whole SH you know what storm. But how pathetic is that we're this far into this and they're just sitting there throwing up campaign bumper stickers on their Twitter? I mean, I don't expect them to say a whole lot that I would agree with anyways, considering the way they've behaved. But my goodness, I mean, really? That's pretty bad.
You know, and also bad, yeah, when the New York City like Mayor Adams, like he, like the left is eating their own basically, because like two of their most liberal cities right now, Chicago and New York City, are now like crying out about what's happening at the border. And I think the Biden administration really thought they were going to skimp by on that until those two started sounding the alarm. And now on top of that, you have Mayor Adams, which I like completely like praise him for doing this. He came out and was like in total support of Israel and was condemning the Palestinian protest in New York City, saying like, we stand by Israel. What Hamas has done is completely disgusting and animal-like. And he has been more aggressive about what's happening in Israel than our own president. And like previous presidents as well, like Obama hasn't come out and said anything. President Clinton hasn't come out and said anything. So it's very telling about where people are standing right now.
Yeah. So what do you think is, how is this going to play out? Because we're hearing during the breaks now, I'm hearing James O'Neill come in during the breaks and talking about 100,000 troops being mobilized. I mean, you know, I understand that, you know, tensions are high. People are upset. I've seen all the videos in the social media feeds and they're atrocious. How do you deal with, you know, my problem, it's not necessarily a problem, but the thing that I don't understand is when we talk about going after Hamas, that's basically the government there inside of Palestine, but you've got Sunni and Shia people in there. You've got civilians that are trying to live their lives and, you know, make food and raise kids and all these things like. But this culture of Hamas and, you know, the various differences between Sunni and Shia are not really, I don't think, understood by people in the West very much, you know. And I'm just, you know, I keep saying this today, but I'm just a dude in the middle of Texas that eats sandwiches for lunch. So, you know, I haven't been there, so I'm not going to like be like, you know, glass that place. You know what I mean? Because I feel like there's people in there that would rather not be involved in it that are stuck in the middle of it. So, I mean, how does a military response work without being like a massive human tragedy? Because I don't think that in Palestine, I mean, they're invading with mopeds and makeshift like paragliders and stuff. Like, can they defend themselves against an F-16 or, you know, a Tomahawk missile?
God, I wish I had the military knowledge to know that. I do work with General Keith Kellogg, who worked under Trump and administration and national security and everything. And so I always hear that today I was like, just, you know, gleaning for information from him. And he was like, what we got to do right now is find where all these Hamas leaders are and take them all out. Like, just point blank, get rid of them now. And they're all in their little hiding spaces across the Middle East. We got to find them and take them out. And I know it's really hard dealing with, you know, there's always that argument of Israel and Palestine. Like, Israel shoots their missiles, they shoot theirs, and civilians get hurt and they die. But at the end of the day, Palestine and Hamas, like, they came after Israel, and like, not in a way where they were just shooting rockets. Like, they were acting like animals with women and children, and now they're held as hostages and mutilating bodies after they had died and beheading them. And the videos online are absolutely terrible. So I would say Israel's response needs to be as aggressive as possible, but that's just from my personal point of view. But, you know, and to go after the heads first.
That's, I'm hearing that a lot and I understand it, you know, but it's like, again, how do you separate, you know, the people that are non-combatants from those people? And then the other thing that really bothers me about all this today is, we're assuming that this wasn't, that there was an intelligence failure. I keep hearing this term intelligence failure, but I've been hearing this term all the way. I heard this term at the Boston bombing. I heard this term at, you know, WTC. I hear this term all the time. I hear this term with regards to COVID. You know what I mean? So it's like intelligence failure. So we must, you know, go to retaliation. But then, you know, I mean, even look at Pearl Harbor. It's like FDR knew that was coming. We found out years later. So are you concerned that there, and we know also that there are intelligence agencies like Mossad and CIA that run color revolutions and things like this to start wars with unstable proxy terrorists like we're talking about right here. Are you concerned that there's some larger geopolitical intelligence apparatus involved, or do you think everything's above board?
You never know now. Like, honestly, nothing surprises me anymore, especially how we watched how like COVID played out in the United States and how things can be done so insidiously. But from General Keith Kellogg, I asked him the same thing. I was like, I thought Israel had like the top, you know, intel like in the world. And he was like, you know, sometimes you just get bad intel. And that was his answer. And I, again, not a military expert, so I don't know what that all entails. But it sounds like they just got the wrong amount of intelligence, and they hit while the iron was hot. But I mean, even the wall that Israel had, they said that they were able, or Hamas was able to technically kind of, I guess it like goes off if something even touches the wall to warn Israelis, but like they got into that system and were able to deactivate it, and Hamas struck while the wall was deactivated. So there's just so many missing pieces and puzzle pieces that I think we'll find out more as we go along. But I think there's a lot more to the story than just bad intel.
Yeah, me too. You know, I'm not buying the bad intel thing. I'm just skeptical because I know the NSA is recording this call. I know they have all my text messages and emails. I know they have all yours, and all you out there listening, they have yours too. So it's like, okay, we set up $1 billion facilities in Utah on our federal tax dollars to spy on all of us. But you can't stop someone from another country, you know, and Israel has a similar setup, and they can't stop someone from across the border. And I guess that leads to the bigger question. What about America? This is probably too big for me to ask you because we're just about out of time. But briefly, what about our border? We've got 10 million new people here by some estimations. Why would there not be terror cells from the same places here or other places with similar designs? Because there's a flight that is full from Istanbul to Bogota every day, and there are people that get on migrant trains and come across our border every day by orders of tens of thousands of people. So, I mean, what do you think about the vulnerability we have here because of that?
No, I think there's a 100% guarantee, and I hate to say guarantee, but like that, I mean, of course, we've caught terrorists at the border already, and think about the amount of terrorists that we haven't caught. I think it's like in the 200s right now that we've caught with Biden. And I mean, even in New York City, you saw pictures of Palestinians and the protests that were happening. And right now, New York City is filled with illegal immigrants that have crossed our border. So I have no doubts that there is infiltration going on, and they know where to come through because, you know, we put the wide open border sign right, you know, at the southern border, and they know they can just walk through. They don't even have to run through. They can just walk through, go up to a border patrol agent, and they'll usher them into the United States. So it'll be interesting how this all plays out.
Very much so. Confounding policies, considering events, definitely. Well, Hilton Beckham, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Again, comms director at America First Policy Institute. Where's the best place for people to follow your work?
Oh, just go to Hilton S. Beckham on Twitter, or X now. That's where you can find me.
All right. I'm going to do that right after I get off the microphone here. And you're going to do that, too, because you're listening to TNT Radio. Thank you, Hilton. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
You need to know, with a lot of the trafficking victims, they talk to me. I work right now with people who have gotten out of sex trafficking, who are in sex trafficking, prostitutes, ex-prostitutes, I don't know, whatever you want to call them. They're in the sex trade. A lot of them have tried to commit suicide or have succeeded, and definitely know people because they relay their stories to me. Community, grassroots, starts at the bottom. We have to intervene. We have to prevent. We have to educate. Then I'll do the heavy lifting in Washington. Bipartisan bills. We have 6 of them right now sitting on the floor of Congress. 6 of them with the 118th Congress. Again, I remind you, bipartisan, belong to no political party. How come we can't get any child safety bills across the finish line? I don't want to hear Congress is busy with, I don't know what they're talking about today, but our precious children, people, human beings, these are human rights abuses. And when I say bipartisan, I'm talking about truly bipartisan, coming together, whether it is online safety, real-time safety. We've got the internet. It's the genie out of the bottle. It's a runaway train.
Lynn Shaw on TNT Radio.
When you can point me to an industry, to a platform that reaches 250 million people a month, virtually 9 out of 10 Americans, that's real. That's substantive. That's important. And that reach and that touch point and that daily reinforcement, it's an amazing place to be able to communicate messages. That's massive.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live. info at your beck and call.
An earful of information.
Driving the news cycle.
Just tell your smart device to play
TNT Radio.
Last week, we were talking a lot about the events on Capitol Hill with regards to the Speaker of the House seat being vacated. And I don't know about you, but for me, that left a lot more questions than answers that still need to be considered. Like, how will the Speaker race work out? Does it affect the presidential race? What happened to congressional power of subpoena with all these investigations and impeachment inquiries going on? So here to discuss with us is someone who's been working with in electoral politics for over a decade now, working on campaigns all across the country, Woodward Johnson. Woodward, welcome to the show. What's the latest you're hearing on this issue of the open speaker seat?
Brian, thanks for having me on. It's Woodrow Johnson. It's really hard to pronounce sometimes. But, you know, look, you're hearing a lot in the media. You kind of hear a lot of this kind of very centralized control of the media where everyone's using the word chaos. That's the word that's being thrown around. Chaos this, chaos that, disorder that. And what I see is just democracy or our republic functioning exactly how it's intended. The fact of the matter is Speaker McCarthy, who, I respect a lot, made promises to become speaker to ensure that he'd win in January. And when those promises weren't made, it's nothing personal. Matt Gaetz decided that the next strategic move was to remove him as speaker, and so it happened.
Yeah. So you're not upset that there's chaos on the Hill? To me, I think we need a little bit of chaos up there. And I was looking through some of the things that McCarthy had agreed to, and it just, to me, it's like, yeah, this guy's not holding up the original deal here.
Absolutely. And look, there's a lot. Look, as a political strategist, of course, the things you look at is, Matt Gaetz said it best himself, that speaker is the LeBron James of fundraising. And that's true. But fundraising is a teachable skill. A lot of those relationships can be transferred over. I'm confident that whoever the next speaker ends up being, it's looking like it's either going to be, Leader Scalise or perhaps even Jim Jordan, who was endorsed by the president. I'm confident either one of them can lead the Republican conference to the next step. And I see this as a speed bump and not really a roadblock.
Okay. And what do you think about all the bubbling and rumoring and questions about Donald Trump having been brought up as a potential? Was that just for fun in the media, or was there any chance?
Brian, I think it would have been fun. It would have been hilarious. It would have been a great platform. But frankly, the president doesn't need it. And I think it might have, look, it may have been a bit of a distraction. The president has already basically said he's not interested in it. He's made an endorsement in this race. He's endorsed Jim Jordan. So I would say that whoever the Republican speaker is will, have the president's support. And I have no, it would have been hilarious. I would have personally enjoyed it. And I'm sure a lot of Americans would have. But ultimately, I think the president made the right decision.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way about it. It was like, it was kind of like that 2016 feeling again when you saw the way he started to roll on Twitter. It's like, I don't know if I'm going to agree with all this, but boy, is it going to be fun. I kind of had that feeling, but I also figured it was probably not realistic, especially considering everything going on with 2024 coming up. And where are we at now? Four indictments he's working against defending himself on there. I mean, What about that? What do you think about the whole indictment process that Trump is going through, and states, trying to figure out ways to keep him off the ballot? Do you think any of these are going to be functional, effective, or do you think we're going to see Trump v. Biden in 2024?
I mean, they're effective in the sense that I think it's helping the Trump campaign. Frankly, every single indictment has clearly been a witch hunt. And the president, the top campaigner for Joe Biden has always been the Democrats. They've consistently underestimated. They consistently believe that if they throw all this nonsense at him, that it will somehow slow him down, and it only makes him stronger. He's going to be the nominee. That is a foregone conclusion. There really is no way around that. He's the Republican nominee. Now, there's been this kind of talk that can Trump beat Joe Biden. And that the narrative being pushed out there is that Trump can't. But then you see Washington Post and ABC, they put out a poll, hardly a conservative news network, saying that Trump is 10 points ahead. And of course, you see them go, oh, well, maybe it's not really that good of a poll. You know, you could see that the left-wing establishment media is they're fearing for their positions because they understand that their reign of power is over.
Yeah, they're in a little bit of disarray for sure. I mean, definitely working contingency plans too. You know, Gavin Newsom is one of the contingency plans that keeps kind of getting brought up. Like, I mean, like, we're all supposed to think that Gavin Newsom's just running off to Florida and passing that don't move to Florida sign that billboard he put up on the way out and going into Florida. You know what I mean? It's so ridiculous to think that this guy is not vying for one of the backup seats, and they have to have one, right? I mean, and maybe they want one. I don't know. I'm really curious about how that's going to play out. You know, because Biden is really a bad look lately.
And Brian, I got to tell you the story that's not being reported on, because there's just as much chaos and disorder on the left as there is on the right. Frankly, there's a fight for that second position right now. There's a, you know, you see Susana Martinez trying to put out executive orders on gun rights because she wants to be the left's version of Ron DeSantis in her mind. Okay. And then you don't have Gavin Newsom attacking her. You have Gavin Newsom's surrogates attacking her, because there's clearly a proxy war between those two camps within the Democratic Party. Of course, you never see that get reported on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just saw, I don't remember the guy's name or state, so it's a little bit anecdotal, but just a week or two ago, I was reading a story about a Democratic, someone from the Democrat Party running for, I don't remember if it was city council or Congress or what, but he was basically saying, hey, they used their own tactics against me. You know, like, they'll certainly turn their, you know, their mail-in ballots and their drop and roll schemes and all the things that they do at the ballot box against people from their own party if they have someone else that they, you know, that they're backing. Hold the line for a second here, because we have an inbound headline, and we'll be right back with Woodrow Johnson here on the Brian McClain Show at today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Question. Huh? What are you guys doing today?
The news.
TNT Radio News.
Sounds good.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Israel is ordered a complete siege on the Gaza Strip, cutting off food and electricity as it prepares for a massive ground offensive within 48 hours. The death toll from flash floods unleashed by a glacial lake bursting its banks in India's Himalayas climbed to 74 on Monday, with 101 people still missing days after the calamity struck.
At TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We're on air 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
We're with Woodrow Johnson right here. He is an expert when it comes to campaigning and this kind of stuff. So I'm very pleased to get his take on everything that's going on. So, Woodrow, what happens when the new speaker comes in? Do we start right back up with our impeachment inquiries and all the judiciary committees, or are those still ongoing? I mean, what's really happening on Capitol Hill right now?
You know, I think that, you know, you're going to see maybe a different tone depending on who becomes our next speaker. There really isn't much of a policy difference as much as a strategic difference, but I think we're going to see a lot more of those impeachment inquiries happening, because frankly, the president and, you know, his son are guilty of all sorts. I mean, they have all sorts of things that are going on in their world, and frankly, they deserve scrutiny. If especially if the last president's going to get the same, even more level of scrutiny.
Yeah, could you imagine if Trump and his kids had these deposits coming from foreign companies like Burisma and all this other stuff? And then, of course, like, I mean, the Hunter Biden story, the dreaded laptop events and all this whole timeline. I mean, I can't even take it anymore. I've been covering that since like 2017 when he left a crack pipe in an Enterprise rental car and walked away scot-free. And it has just... it's been this atomic mushroom cloud of disgusting information ever since. But the most recent one was like $39,000 for hookers or something like this. I mean, it's just like, it's so in America's face. I mean, what do you make of the way that the media and even social media managed, you know, largely algorithmically and in cahoots with the government, as we learned in the Twitter files? What do you think about the way that they just tell you nothing's wrong here? It's like standing, it's like the meme of the dog in front of the burning house saying nothing's wrong here, you know, sitting there eating.
Well, I would invite everyone in your audience, if they haven't read 1984, because I think that's what we're witnessing right now.
Very simply put and very astute. Yeah, I would totally agree. And follow it up with Brave New World if you want to see the direction. So what about the congressional races as we lead up to 2024? I mean, what's at stake there with the congressional races? I mean, it's a pretty narrow margin right now. It wasn't the wave that we were expecting in 2022. Of course, that's maybe debatable because there's still some voting chicanery that hasn't been ironed out, in my opinion, but we'll set that aside. What do you think it's going to look like? What's at stake, and what's it going to look like as we hit the next cycle?
Brian, this might be in the face of what everyone else is saying, but I anticipate that the Republicans are going to expand their majority. It just, you know, people could say that people don't like Donald Trump, but the fact of the matter is this president's probably the least popular president we've ever had. This president has shown that, you know, President Biden has shown that he can't handle these national security threats. This country is less safe. This country is less prosperous. And that's all been under Joe Biden's leadership. And when you look at, you know, and what's unique about this race is people remember what it was like under President Trump, especially, you know, before COVID. And our country was safer. Our country was stronger. Our country was more prosperous. And I don't think you can think of a race where the contrast is so, you know, is already been demonstrated.
And we're seeing people walking away. You know, there was that hashtag walk away movement. But I think that, you know, that has increased. I think that that's gotten much larger. I'm seeing African-American populations, Latinos, Asians, even the Muslim population here in the United States is now banding together in some towns with conservatives over parents' rights and, you know, these gender issues and all this wacky rainbow stuff coming out of the schools. You know, so, I mean, it really does seem like, just from a social zeitgeist sort of way, that a lot of people, regardless of all their, you know, inherent features, are pulling away from this Biden sort of administration. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about the all the claims of mail-in ballot fraud, drop and roll schemes? Like, there's some pretty ugly reports coming out of like Pennsylvania and Georgia, Arizona, and all that. Do you think our voting system is secure enough to even allow a red wave to happen? Like, what do you think? How vulnerable do you think we are to faulty vote systems?
Well, Brian, the fact is that the election fraud, voter fraud's always been there. It was made worse by COVID. COVID was, you know, emergencies are often used as an excuse to expand government power. And, you know, as a result, we sent out mail ballots to every single person on the voter roll. Well, you know, I lived in an apartment complex in 2020, and I remember seeing stacks of mail ballots right outside the mailbox that anyone could just grab and fill out. Doesn't take a genius to tell you that maybe that could be abused. You know, back in 2020, you know, my wife actually was volunteering and she found a dead voter in an afternoon. Imagine if we had the time to do a full audit. Frankly speaking, that, you know, it's not voter fraud I'm worried about. It's election fraud. The game was changed. The rules were changed late in the game. In some cases, I would argue unconstitutionally. But I find that, you know, the logic, reason is on our side, and now we just need to be organized. And I find that Republicans across the country are learning their lesson. And that's what makes conservatives different than liberals, is that we reflect, we critically think, and we think that, hey, you know, maybe we should do something different because that didn't work last time. Whereas, if you aren't conservative, or if you, you know, just take everything from some central plan, you just do what you're told.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. And so if our Congress gets a higher majority this time around, do you think we'll see the I like and don't like the chaos caucus label at the same time, because I like the idea. I think we need more gridlock, more stoppage of things that don't fit in our framework. I think that's all good. But we only had 8 people when it came down to that vote, and like 190 or some joined the Democrats in that one. Do you think that could keep? Are we looking at a better, more conservative rather than establishment rhino style Congress in 2024?
Brian, absolutely. And, you know, I think we, it's so funny. They want to call it chaos. They want to say, conservatives are not pragmatic. And here's the reality, Brian, the conservatives are the pragmatic part of the party. Moderates are the ones that are dogmatic, the ones that won't do things, you know, do ethical and reasonable things to win. So yes, I absolutely think that we're looking at a conference that's going to be more conservative and frankly more more practical.
Excellent. Woodrow Johnson, where do people find you online to follow all your work?
You can search for me, Woodrow Johnston. I pop up right on Google. I'm on all the social media, on X, formerly known as Twitter. I'm on Instagram as Real Woodrow Johnston. And I'm Liberty Woody on Twitter, or Twitter X. And my website is reverrpm.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much for everything you're doing. Thank you for joining me here on the Brian McClain Show at today's News Talk on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
And just like that, border walls suddenly work. Border walls are necessary, and border walls should be built by the federal government. In a display of hypocrisy stunning for even the most hypocritical political administration in American history, the Biden administration, which defunded wall construction on day one, actively deconstructed portions of the wall that were working, and sold off panels that were necessary to complete construction of the wall for pennies on the dollar, now declares it a matter of national security to build a wall. I guess after 2.5 years of facilitating literally an invasion of our homeland, you've got a little elbow room, a little room to work, a little room to cravenly claim the moral high ground on an issue that patriotic America First Americans have been screaming about since 20 January 2021. Hypocrisy knows no bounds, and apparently the Biden administration doesn't either. But after all, there's an election coming up, so by any means necessary. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
At the World Economic Forum's 2018 annual meeting in Davos, globalist stakeholders plotted to advance a program for user-centric digital identities. This global problem is well underway, but the mainstream media fails to report it. Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum claims digital identities are urgently needed, otherwise citizens and consumers may miss out on the opportunities of the fourth industrial revolution. In reality, the globalist program of digital identities would create an Orwellian dystopia, where oppressive governments backed by multinational corporations could track and monitor every transaction that we make. The World Bank's October 2019 Identification for Development Practitioners Guide states, "Digital ID and payments platforms provide the means to move towards a cashless society. Will the bank accounts of those opposing this tyranny be frozen?"
This is the Brian McClain Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
How is it? We're already in the final segment. My goodness, time flies when you're having fun, which I do right here with you at today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Visit us on the web, please. TNTRadio.live is where you find us. Everything you need, the app, the calendar, all that good stuff, the live chat. Shout out to everybody in the live chat. Thank you for joining me for the Brian McClain Show. Now, I've bonded with my next guest in the past over her fight against a bill called AB 2098 in California, which stated that any doctor that speaks against consensus regarding COVID can get investigated or have their license taken away. And that is dangerous. That is extremely dangerous. That's a violation of First Amendment right there. So I'm very pleased to bring back to the show for the first time in a minute, noted physician and scientist out of Los Angeles, Dr. Azadeh Khatibi. Dr. Khatibi, it's great to see you. Welcome back to the Brian McLean Show.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. McLean. It's great to be back. And I'm so excited to update you and your listeners on what's been going on in the fight for freedom and specifically medical freedom in our state of California and connecting that to the broader forces at work federally and even globally.
Right. That's the big thing. I mean, we got to look at this from our towns, our states, and then start looking outward. Where is this all going? You and I have talked about this pandemic industrial complex in the past and all of their designs and directions and all this stuff with mRNA technology. So really pleased to have you back. So first off, tell us the result of your fight against AB 2098. What happened?
Sure. So what happened is, you know, quick background in the 2020-2021, we started seeing this repressive COVID mainstream narrative that was being pushed on us, really. And there was active censorship happening by tech, and just people started to self-censor themselves because they were afraid that if you didn't follow the mainstream consensus opinion regarding COVID or you spoke out, that it was going to be frightening. And I'm speaking specifically about the medical community. And California took it to the extreme and passed. This was a bill that eventually I was working really hard to not let it pass, but it passed. Then Governor Gavin Newsom signed it, AB 2098, and it became law signed in late 2022, and then became active in January 2023. And it said that if you speak out against consensus, we can investigate you or take away your license. Well, so we went to court and we got a preliminary injunction granted against this law by the judge, God bless him. And so we were waiting. He said he would rule later in the year. And what happened in the meantime, in 2023, is that the California legislature has very quietly, this past September, decided to reappeal the same law that the Democrats in the legislature and Gavin Newsom had promoted. And he'd signed it. They had said it was absolutely necessary to go after misinformation and disinformation. And now they changed their tune. Oh, it's not really necessary. And they're not really commenting too much. So they quietly went back on their own bill and on their own law. And what Gavin Newsom told my friend a few weeks ago is it was his idea to reappeal it and that it never passed in the first place. And for me, the question begs the question, if it should have never passed in the first place, you should have never censored doctors in the first place. Why'd you sign this law? Like, why did you do it?
And That's what I
know too. So, yeah, he wants to look good. I think he just wants to hide the past, you know, make it look like he was a tyrant in California, a tyrant that was mandating COVID vaccination for all children in order to attend public or private school, a tyrant that promoted lockdowns that caused horrible downstream consequences on the populace in terms of mental health issues, in terms of economic instability, all of these things that we know affect physical health, ultimately. And he has power. He has power aspirations. He wants to be president. So he's trying to change the narrative of what happened, trying to rewrite history. I'm certainly not going to let him rewrite that history. So we fought it. They reappealed it. And we'll see if the judge actually still gives a judgment on the law, even though it's going to be no longer in effect in January.
Well, you know, if that's politicking, and it's interesting that's your analysis, because I was tracking, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I was tracking two more atrocious, you know, assembly bills that were about to go through over the last few weeks, and he didn't sign them. And I thought to myself, that sounds like something you want to sign, Gavin. And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, I wonder if this is politicking. I wonder if this is presidential, if this is quote unquote presidential behavior. Oh, I got to be presidential, so I can't be signing things that are in direct violation of the First Amendment. Sounded great in 2021 when I was having wine at the laundry, French laundry, but
French laundry, yeah.
It doesn't look good for my campaign if I have to go on the campaign trail. I mean, do you think that's where this is headed? Like just generally with him?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was an extremist governor, and he is deep down in his core, when given the ability and when given the environment, to become extremist. And now he has to go to the center in order to look good to a larger number of people. But we're not going to forget what he did. We're not going to forget the toxic nature that he created, fear, wounding, trauma in parents. I had a friend of mine just shaking, so upset that because she didn't want to vaccinate her kids, and she was afraid she was going to be forced to vaccinate her children against COVID in order for them to finish high school. I mean, this is wounding. And in some types of people, and some people, it would be actual trauma that he inflicted on them. And to ignore the grief of others, to ignore the grief of a large portion of your populace is terrible leadership.
Yeah. And I would also point out, it's almost like you don't need AB 2098 disallowing doctors from, you know, giving their, you know, going outside the consensus, as it's not even legalese. I don't even know how we can use that word, but you don't even need that when you've signed all these other bills that force every child in school to take, you know, all, what is it, 78 shots, 90 shots by the time they're 18 years old or something like that. I mean, obviously people are being coerced into it in other ways, unless they're, you know, really savvy and doing homeschool and, you know, doing their research and understand all the deeper meanings of all this.
Well, I think that this will hopefully bring about new conversations and revitalize the conversation of what does it mean to practice ethical medicine? And if there is any element of coercion in your patient, you know, they'd have to do a medical procedure in order for their child to attend school, like that level of coercion, is that really ethical? We need to have these conversations. And one silver lining that came out of COVID and the mandates is that I think that it's kind of pushed this to the forefront of in talking about vaccination, to talk about the ethics of it. Because ignoring ethics, especially in emergent situations or apparently emergent situations, is a terrible thing to do. What we shouldn't be doing as a people.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think you're right. I think that conversation has expanded quite a bit since the last time you and I talked on air. I see a lot more concerned mothers, a lot more bloggers, a lot more people that are just, you know, happen to be social media savvy, talking about this now. So that's encouraging, definitely a silver lining. And what happened in federal court? I'm told you were in federal court recently also.
Well, so that was so our case was heard in federal court because we were actually suing the state. So it happened at the federal level. And then as a result of my advocacy you know, to me, I kind of am just saying at a certain point, you just kind of get so fed up and just so livid with what's going on. You have to speak out. So I was just speaking out. To me, it was normal, but I guess people in Washington noticed. And so the congressional subcommittee, the select subcommittee on the COVID pandemic, invited me to testify. And I did that a few weeks ago before Congress to talk about how the federal government's actions, colluding, in my assessment, they colluded, and in the judge's perspective, they have colluded with social media companies, and they've actively pressured social media companies to go after Americans and censor them. They have worked with academic institutions to identify people to then actively go and censor or to promote the censorship of them. So, and then they make certain medical interventions that there were still questions about whether or not they were effective against COVID. The narrative made any doctor who might want to try that or try a trial of that or to try different variations of medications or protocols made them look like horrible people. And as a result of that, you're going to have limiting of research. You're going to have limiting of questioning, which is what science actually thrives on. Hey, have we looked at it this way? Have we looked at it that way? Let's do this research project. What if we actually do this vitamin regimen with this medication and see if that works together? It didn't work alone, you know, to investigate this stuff. So their actions then really ostracizing certain groups of doctors really had this downstream toxic effect. And I talked about this In, for example, California, it had other effects in across the nation, and not only chilled the speech of doctors, it chilled a lot of people's speech. But what happens is, and this we showed this, it's a First Amendment violation. If you censor someone, you're actually or chill their speech, you're actually keeping the patient from hearing the doctor's speech, and that's another First Amendment violation. So I talked about this in front of Congress. I was super excited to go and talk to them. Did it move the needle a little bit? I hope and pray it did somehow to have served.
I hope so too. You know, I mean, you're preaching to the choir with me, you know, I'm with you on this stuff, but how did it, did you get pushback from people? Cause I've noticed, there's some people that are pretty involved in, you know, the mainstream narratives on these things up there. I don't know if they're sponsored by Pfizer or what, but I have my questions.
Well, I mean, I think this, and this was really interesting for me to see the way these hearings are set up, I think is not really conducive to actually getting at questions. So, you know, the Republicans are inviting their own witnesses, the Democrats are inviting their own witnesses, and then and I think part of this is they don't want to look bad. They only ask questions of the witness that they've invited so that they get the answer that they want. So it's not a process of openness, thoughtfulness, curiosity, putting down defenses and saying, hey, this is my perspective. What is yours? And let's investigate and dig deep. It wasn't like that. So there's a lot of grandstanding and actively not listening. Part of it, I mean, in my hearing, unfortunately, some representatives on the Democrat side really wasted people's time talking about and the witnesses. As a witness, I go there out of my own pocket. Right. This is my own time. I'm paying for it. It's not something that they reimburse you for. So you're going there and the representatives, two of them started talking about abortion. And this is like, this is not at all related to the topic at hand. And actually, if you want to talk about the ethics of abortion, why don't we actually talk about the ethics of mandating a vaccine on one person versus potentially two people in abortion, right? An intervention, abortion would be an intervention that involves theoretically, you know, depending on your, or debate, you know, possibly depending on your perspective, one or two people. So let's just at least have that conversation where it involves one person and try to move the needle on that. But they didn't. So, you know, it is just, I really didn't like the fact that they wasted the witnesses' time. The hearings could have been done a lot better. I appreciate the Republicans who invited me, and I hope that over time we can kind of clarify these things, even through the discussions that we had there.
That's too bad, you know, because that really, and I'm not surprised to hear that. I've noticed that a little bit just as a spectator, you know, looking at it as a spectator sport. I've noticed how it's just like, the way the timing works on it, it's like, okay, someone from this side, someone from that side, this guest, that guest. Very seldom are you seeing like knockdown, drag out, cross examinations or a item or a point like you just brought up, like an ethical foundation that needs to be agreed upon at, you know, the forefront of the conversation so that it can be explored deeper or at least see where the disagreement is and whether it's bridgeable or not. Like, we don't seem to get any of that. It's just like, here's this polarized side and then here's this polarized side. And oh, by the way, we're going to throw in abortion, even though it's off topic. And it just puts us, it stops the steamroll that needs to happen to have the discussion happen.
Yeah. And I don't even think the knockdown, drag out fight would be the ideal. Like, you would want something where people are calm and they're, you know, curious and discussing and go in with that open mind as opposed to already knowing what they have decided. And they're just going to kind of grandstand and just say that, you know, this is how it is and this is the correct way. I think that what I tried to do there was really cultivate positivity, cultivate love in my heart. And I try to just have that, and it, you know, is looking at each representative and really trying to promote that. And I remember one representative on the other side, she looked at me like I was like slightly like she was super surprised because I was looking at her and smiling, and then she softened and she smiled at me. So for me, in my heart, and even, you know, the idea for me is that I need to keep going, doing what I believe in, you know, being having strong boundaries about what's right and wrong, and but at the same time doing it with love.
Absolutely. That's why people gravitate to you. That's why people gravitate to conversations like this one, you know, because you're when people see other people with open minds and open hearts having a discussion, it changes everything, you know, and that's why we can't allow ourselves to be polarized and have every single thing be politicized. I mean, it has been just a total degradation of our ability to be friends and neighbors and coworkers and family members and, you know, fellow Americans and all that stuff. We had about a minute left. I'll leave it to you for your final comments, and be sure and tell people where they can find you.
Sure. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter. I've become much more active on Twitter now at Azadeh Khatibi, my first name, A-Z-A-D-E-H. My last name is K-H-A-T-I-B-I at Azadeh Khatibi. And then on Instagram, I'm at Dr. Azadeh Khatibi, D-R, and then my first name and last name. Thank you so much for having me, Brian. It's such a pleasure to talk to you every time.
Azadeh, definitely very pleased. And I understand you have a film coming out, so we're going to get you back on. I would love to hear about your film that's coming out. So we'll keep in touch, and we'll do this again really soon. So thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you. Love to all.
All right. Yes, absolutely. What a great show. Stay tuned. Misty Winston is coming up next. I want to thank Lou Pate for filling in for Steve Hook today. Steve will be back with us next week, and Lou will be back with me tomorrow for that first hour. We got a lot of great shows lined up for you here at today's News Talk TNT Radio.